Before we get started, let me tell you about patreon.com/the Delvin Cox Experience. There we have exclusive shows such as So Tell Me, an introspective show about my life. That's what So Tell Me is. People apparently love that show a lot. Hard Asses with Jody B. That is the show that me and Jody B do monthly that gets a little wild. The D&D Podcast, which is a show I do with my son, which is a review show of movies and TV shows and stuff like that. You get to see the other side of my son. And we have much, much more stuff to check out there. We also have a show with Mike Fowler and other things that you will just love. So go on patreon.com/the Delvin Cox Experience. Also, shout out to Patreon producers, Ben Goodwin, a.k.a. Ghost Rider UK, Mikey Famine, and Douglas Regert Johnson. Thank you, guys. Peace. Continuing the podcast conversation that we've been having all month about mental health and the importance of it and kind of like taking care of yourself, I have Alicia on the podcast. How you doing?
Good to see you again, Delvin.
Good to see you too. For those who don't know, let them know all the cool, awesome things you do.
I'm a guest on Delvin's podcast here and there, probably the coolest. I have a border collie and that's pretty awesome. However, I also do have a really amazing podcast called Business as Unusual, and I have folks come on and talk about the ways that they're working to build a new way of doing business that's people and planet centered, and yet still includes profit, because we can have all of it. This idea that we can't, not so true.
There you go. And for those who remember from older Delvin Cox Experience episodes, she was the host of the Bicurion podcast. So there you
which
go.
Is relaunching. Mikey and I are going to put that on starting in February.
So there you go. That's even better.
It's going to be great. I'm super excited.
Great timing then.
It's perfect.
So I usually start the episodes off with the 5 for 5, but because of the topic at hand, I haven't been starting them off with the 5 for 5 numbers. I've just been asking this simple question. How are you doing?
Oh, thank you for asking. I am actually doing really well.
That's great to hear. You know, there's a lot of chatter and things going on about mental health, and I think it's a good, important conversation to have with people, because when I look at things and I look at society today, I think mental health has to do with a lot of the problems that we've been having, whether it's depression, whether you want to even into the things that we see in terms of like school shootings and violence that we have. A lot of those things have to do with people. They always seem to find a letter after the fact of this person venting and their plans and things like that. And I always wonder, well, why wasn't anything done about this? Why wasn't anybody there to lend this person a hand? And, you know, we've had situations where with the whole pandemic thing, we having a lot of suicides and stuff. So I thought it would be a good topic to have and just talk to people and kind of just get their opinion on their things like that. So. I really
agree with you on that.
So with that being said, what is your experience and what are your thoughts on mental health in general?
I think it's a great conversation, and thank you so much for inviting me to be part of it. And I think that it's interesting because I feel like this is a conversation that's coming up a lot in my world right now. And I feel like there's a lot of disconnection and isolation. People are really afraid of other people. And there's ways in which I personally feel like we've lost some of the skill set and tolerance for being uncomfortable. So you asked me right before we got on the air, you know, how I was doing. And I said, well, I got to visit my dad, and that was really great for me. And, you know, I'm a sort of a lefty, you know, progressive person. I don't really define myself in that way, but it's definitely how I come across. And I think it's a fair assessment of how I've lived my life. Okay. And my dad is a conservative Republican who lives in Southern Utah, and we're really close. And when I say we've worked hard at our relationship, I mean that we've both prioritized our love for each other and been willing to have some uncomfortable conversations and prioritize how to find a way together. We wouldn't have done it if we both weren't committed, because there were definitely times when, and even though things are great now, you know, I visited for the holiday, is in the fall, there's definitely some moments where I could see he was being patient, you know, but I'm okay with that, because it's a gift that we give each other. And I recently had a conversation with a woman around that, because she was like, well, how can you do that and still be authentic? And I said, well, my dad and I have the same values. We express them differently. So we both have the value of being a service to community. And I do it through nonprofit work, through activism, through podcasts, and he does it through his church. And if we talk about how we express it, that's not always going to be very connective. But if we can, if we land on our value that we really believe it's very important to show up in your community and be of service, that's a very connective and rich conversation. And so I also feel like, you know, and I want to caveat like that having what she calls a guest filter and being able to connect on that, it's not the same as having to have armor because you don't feel safe. So that's a totally different thing. And I'm not talking about that, but I do think that I've seen that as also, honestly, I feel like in people that are a little bit more privileged, they'll associate being uncomfortable or feeling like they don't know something with things being wrong. And then they'll kind of like react defensively or angrily. And then we just have more distance instead of maybe engaging in some curiosity or doing some self-reflection. Like, gosh, this feels really awkward, and I might be the reason why.
Yeah, I think you're right with that. I think we have gotten a society today where everything has become so combative.
Yeah.
Where we just kind of pick sides and kind of stay in our own social circle. And I think social media has a big part to do with that. Mm-hmm. I also think the fact that we had a pandemic and people were stuck inside for so long with isolation, I think that isolation from other people and other thoughts and viewpoints also have something to do with it. I think that people don't realize that while going to work sucks, like, you know, the whole process of going to work sucks, there's a community element of that where you see like this same person every day and you conversate with that person and you get to know that person. That community element, I think, was lost a little bit in terms of us, you know, staying at home and having to work from home and stuff like that. I think that affects people, whether they realize it or not. Mm-hmm. Just that kind of like talking to someone every day and seeing someone different besides your inner circle and your inner family and hearing different thoughts and opinions on that. And I think we need to get more into learning about other people. And that's why one of the reasons why I do this podcast is because I think it's important to learn the other side and other thoughts and opinions, because if we don't and we just stick in our narrow minds and our kind of mindset of things, that can cause other issues. And I think it's great that, because this is my whole thing, and when it comes to politics and stuff like that, yes, you could be left or you could be right and stuff like that, but a lot of times you have family members who don't follow the same trends that you follow or same viewpoints.
Right.
You can cut them off. Okay, but sometimes not that easy. Sometimes you have to have a middle ground, and you have to have a conversation with that person and a neutral ground where you can stand on and have and talk to that person, because like you said, it's your dad. It's not easy to be like, well, I can't talk to my dad no more. That's not an easy thing to ask someone to do.
Right.
You know, and I don't think people kind of get that. I think it's always, as of late, people have kind of like, oh, it's either you're with us or against us. But no, there's layers to this. There's a society, as much as human beings, are very multifaceted. And I think it's good that you have this understanding with your dad and you can kind of communicate with things that you kind of do agree on with him.
Right.
And more importantly, and I think more importantly for your mental health and his, you can still share that father-daughter bond.
Yeah. No, and he, I'll tell you, so in early October, he called me and was saying, you know, he had some friends who were asking him about, you know, how to show up for a child that has not in the faith. And he said, just love them, to make sure they know they're welcome. And then he called me to say, you want to make sure that's really clear, that you know you're welcome. I know we have different ideas about things, and what matters to me is that you're my daughter and I love you.
Yes.
And I feel like I took this class called The Art of Interrupting Racism, that this woman, Amina Chowdhury, does. There's a lot of things out there that will tell you, gosh, it's really bad to be racist. And you're going to be if you live in this society. But she actually has created a program as to what to do about that, how to take actions that are like consistent and manageable and effective. And when in the class, someone in the class said, you know, I cut my parents off because they're super racist. And she looked at that person and she said, well, now they're my problem. And I was just like, you know, that's a really good point, you know, that. And I'm not saying there aren't times when the right thing to do, there are situations, I'm not here to judge anybody's choices. So if you're like, what about this? I'm not talking to you. Like, I really do believe that those interpersonal situations are very nuanced and challenging. And I'd also, like I said, I think there's a place where you're not in danger. You're just, it's unpleasant or uncomfortable. And being able to kind of sit in that and learn how, there's this woman, Kelly Judd, she does a lot of wellness work. And she talks about, okay, if you want to continue to be close to your family, but there are things that are challenging. She does this whole series before the holidays. And how do you notice when you're going to be not able to be the person you want to be because you're overwhelmed? What do you do to take care of yourself so that you're going to show up effectively in this scenario? And that's what I think of learning how to be accountable to yourself for your reactions is a big thing. Like, there are some times when I'm like, oh, I cannot have this conversation. I am not going to contribute to any good here. Like, yeah. Right. And I do that to myself all the time. Like, I'll get onto a social media thing and I'll see something. I'll start typing. And as I'm typing, I'm like, does this contribute in any way to the good? No. Done.
Yeah.
It saves me energy. It saves other people hassles. Like, even if I say it the best way possible, if I'm in that framework, I am probably going to do or say something that just makes it worse. And I don't need to be doing that.
Yeah, I've learned over the years of being on social media, sometimes you just got to just ignore the comments and the thing. Yeah. Because it takes a taxing toll on you mentally as well. Like, you're sitting here wasting your time and energy arguing with somebody over a point that you probably aren't going to change.
Right. And what could you do with that energy instead? Right. Yeah. Like, and there's this Indigenous activist that I worked with a couple of years ago. She made a point that I thought was really powerful. And, you know, in terms of mental health and community, I personally believe what you were saying, it's not just work that we need to find ways to connect to people around us. Yes. And I'm not great at it. Unless, like, I'm not going to hold myself up as an example. And it's something I really try to find ways to do authentically, because I feel like we, in addition to that social isolation, we need to learn how to engage. If I just watch out for the people in my community as much as I can, if I make sure that the elderly person down the road, that their walk is shoveled in the snow, or I, you know, bring soup to my neighbor or whatever, like whatever I can do, that's not too much, right? I'm not trying to be somebody's savior, but just contribute to easing people's burdens and supporting them. What would be different in the world if that were just a normal thing that everybody did? I think a lot.
I agree. I've always said it when it comes to like mental health and everything that comes around, because mental health affects everything in our day-to-day lives, you know. And, you know, one of the things I always say is that community plays a part in it. Like, if you have a community that's around you that you're helping, that you feel a part of, it helps a lot of issues. Even when it comes to policing, it's a lot harder.
Yeah, they've shown that.
Yeah, it's a lot harder for a police to kind of do the things they do that may be unethical to people that they see every day and they know every day and they conversate with every day.
Well, and it's It's also, so one, there's some communities, and I want to say in the East Coast, that have had basically a large portion of the calls that come to the police department actually go to community volunteers. And then I know here in Colorado, and they've had a lot of success with that. And then here in Colorado, if you call 911 for a disturbance, they ask, do you need an ambulance, a mediator, or an officer? And so if it's a mental health disturbance, you ask for an ambulance and a mediator, and then they send that out. And so it's somebody who's actually, because here's the thing, police are not qualified to psychologically assess that type of situation. That's not what their training is. It's like the people that say, oh, armed teachers. No, teachers are not, that's not what they get trained for. It's hard enough to manage the classroom. You don't know what to do. Like, we have to be more realistic about what's fair to ask of people. But also, like you said, if I know my neighbor, and I know that my neighbor has a mental health issue, or their child does, and I can hear things that are scary, right? Maybe I call and ask for an ambulance. Like, yes. And I made this. So when I moved into the place that I'm in, people had talked about that. And I was like, man, I get so scared, but it's not, I'm going to make a commitment. And so I was sitting in my house and I heard my neighbors screaming. And I was like, all right, I'm going to go outside and see what's happening. And they were in an altercation. And I just stood there and I said, I see you, and this isn't okay. Like, you need to take a break. And I just was there, and they separated. Now, it's not like I heroically fixed anything, but for me, that felt important to say, I'm not going to just sit and be scared. I'm going to go take a step. And in that moment, it was okay. There were other things that made me feel like I felt like I was okay in doing that. And so I'm not saying everybody should, but anywhere that you can step in, and I asked them, like, do you need any help? Like, are you okay? Like, I wasn't trying to combat anyone, or I was just like, sometimes when people are freaking out, they get angry, but really they just need someone to say, hey, do you want a glass of water?
Yeah. I'm glad you brought all that up, because funny you mentioned all that stuff. The previous episode where we had a conversation about this, one of the things that was mentioned was two of the things you just brought up. The fact that sometimes these people, when they have their mental breakdowns, they just need somebody to talk to and somebody to vent to. That's the first mm-hmm. thing. And the second thing they brought up, as a person who deals with mental health issues, is the fact that 9 times out of 10, calling the police is no help. Like, and it's almost no help. It's not helpful to them. We need a better way of doing that. It seems like Colorado has a good system in terms of, like, hey, do you need an ambulance? Do you need a police? Do you need a mental health expert? I think that's a good system to work with.
Mm-hmm.
But that this person who was on the episode did not have. It's just like, hey, we're just going to call the police and send them out there. Like, hey, sometimes the police can make things worse.
Often, honestly, because they aren't trained for that. And yeah. And they have the authority. Although that's the other thing, this is totally off topic, so you may need to edit it, but they ended qualified immunity here in Colorado. If a police officer harms someone, they can be sued. And I feel this is the first state to do that. And I feel like that's another piece of it, because it's not safe. And I will go back to, so I think some of the mental health concerns that we have are that feeling of insecurity. A friend of mine in Canada said, Americans define freedom by being able to do what they want, even if it harms them. And she's like, we define freedom by having the security you need in terms of healthcare, housing, and food to be able to live the life that you want to live, that's fulfilling to you. And I'm like, yeah, that's freedom to me. Yeah. That's why I'm about, universal healthcare, and about us having a social safety net, because the people who are scared and uncared for behave in ways that are harmful to themselves and others. We know that socioeconomic distress is one of the biggest drivers of the majority of our social issues. But instead of wanting to fix it for some reason, we just continue to let it get worse. And I don't say we, I mean, I know we all feel a little bit helpless, but it's weird. People see it as a handout. I'm like, don't you understand that, we've all had a handout, like someone took care of us. Why don't we want to take care of other people?
I think we live in a society now where, unfortunately, helping people looks like a handout. And it's not a handout because, like, you know, it is weird because it seems like, and I don't want to get too political, but I'm going to say what I'm going to say because this is the truth. We have money for every other aspect of things. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to helping, whether it's schools, whether it's mental health, mm-hmm. whether it's things that come that we actually may need, like the help right now, we're like, oh, we can't afford that. And I always wonder, I always question that because, like, we have $2 billion to send here, $2 billion for this, but we don't mm-hmm. have the funds to help the people who are here right now dealing with problems. Like, I know, and it annoys me because you see all these homeless people on the streets mm-hmm. that are dealing with mental health issues that yeah. people walk over and just ignore every day. That's fine. Mm-hmm. And we can't help them, but we can't help them. And then you see the people, you have kids in classes who have mental health issues. You have other people just going around through their life with mental health issues. And it just kind of gets brushed to the side. Like when I was growing up, everybody has that family member who they're like, oh, that's just your crazy uncle or your crazy aunt mm-hmm. that you just ignore her. But at some point in time, we got to stop ignoring them and get them help.
Yeah.
And I think that's where we at now. And to even touch on this even a little bit more, to go back on what you were saying earlier about policing, one of the things that people kind of leave out and ignore is a lot of these police officers have mental health issues on their own. It's a stressful job. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a stressful job, and, you know, they need help. So this is not just this is a encapsulating all of us type thing. Like, they need help. We need help. We need to figure out better ways to kind of delegate and give mental health to people who need it.
Right. Well, and that, so I just wanted to look this up because I realized, so to your point, according to HUD, it would cost, you ready for this?
Okay.
$20 billion to end homelessness.
Wow.
That's it. That's all it would cost.
Wow.
That's it. And we don't do it. We don't tax the rich and ask them. I mean, and some people are like, oh, that's not fair. I'm like, okay, but like, what is it? Jeff Bezos has $500 billion. So let's say you have $500,000 and you have to give 20,000 of it to end homelessness. Maybe just do it. Why don't they do it? We know why they don't do it. Because the fear of us being homeless, the fear of us not having a place to be, that's what keeps us in jobs that don't pay us money and keeps us from being in our lives and doing the things that fulfill us. It's how we get exploited. We have to be afraid or we won't do these things. We saw it, right? Like after COVID, so many people are like, I don't want to go exploit myself for a job where they're willing to let me die.
Yeah.
Like, and that's reasonable. And people are like, oh, people don't want to work. I'm like, no, they just are tired of being used so you can make a ton of money. I apologize. It's not totally mel. I just, it makes my heart ache. I don't have $20 billion, but sheesh, that's a ton of money. But for those folks, it is not. They could snap their fingers and be done, and they don't do it.
Yeah. And to be honest, the government spends more than that in a year on things.
Yes.
Other resources. So I don't see why we can't find the money to do that.
Right. And that, I mean, if people are, they don't like crime. And my feeling is usually the humane thing is also more cost effective.
Yes.
Like if you look at it, they did a thing with, it was called Million Dollar Murray in California. And they followed a homeless man around for a year. And he literally used $1 million worth of social services. And so it's like, well, instead of having him live on the streets and be in constant agony, there's what they call the housing first program. And that costs like $50,000, $60,000 a year. So how many people for $1 million a year? And that's just one guy. And maybe he was extreme. I don't know. Maybe they use an extreme example. But still, even if it was half that, it's still a lot.
Yeah. It probably wasn't even a quarter of that. Like, you know, people survive off of far less than that. It's just kind of finding that boundaries and setting up things and resources so we can. It's all about the infrastructure. It's like, mm-hmm. let's figure out how to make this work and kind of like solving this problem, because this problem that we have with mental health, I think it goes into a lot of aspects of our life. Like, like if you want to go to suicide rates, you want to go to crime, you want to go to a lot of other things. Sometimes a lot of things have to do with mental health, and I think it's a very important aspect that constantly gets ignored.
Mm-hmm. No, it does. And I mean, and maybe you've probably talked about this before, but I feel like men have a rough go in terms of being supported when they feel vulnerable or need that sort of nurturing caretaking. I don't know, I'm not a guy, so I don't know, but it just, my perception is that for men, there's a social cost almost to saying I'm not okay, or I need someone to hold me. I don't know. Okay.
I agree. I think that there is a social cost. I think there is this stereotype that if a man says they're in pain and they're not doing okay, some see it as being weak and not strong and not being able to be a caretaker for your family and kind of provide. Mm-hmm. I think that narrative kind of needs to change. I think we need to start looking more into not only like just uplifting men so they know that, hey, if I'm down, it's okay. Mm-hmm. You can reach out. You can kind of, we have resources and help for you. And it doesn't, you don't have to just kind of, well, just suck it up, you know, just suck it up, be a man about it. No, sometimes it's not that easy. You can't just suck it up and be, quote unquote, be a man about it. Sometimes you need help. You need somebody to tell you everything's going to be okay, because there's a lot to deal with in this world right now. So like you said, if you look at everything that's going on, I think for everybody, it's a lot to deal with. And men just have it rough just like everybody else does.
Yeah. There's it may have just been a regular health study that they did a few years ago. And they said that the answer to this question was the single biggest predictor of whether or not a man would have a longer or shorter lifespan. And the question was, who, aside from your significant other, would you call at 2 a.m. if you weren't okay?
That's a great question.
And if they can't answer that question, they are likely to have a shorter lifespan.
That's an excellent question.
Huh. So, and maybe that's a question men can ask each other. And he's like, you don't have someone, I got you. Because a lot of men set their social circle up, which is one of those places where you get through work, right? Or through their wives, right? And then that's why I think a lot of men who get divorced end up being really depressed and lonely, because they suddenly lose access to their social world. Even if their friends still like them, they're not used to making, you know, plans or reaching out or whatever it is.
Yeah, there's something to that. You know, it's familiarity, just being familiar with a certain situation. And then once that situation is gone, it's not easy to, and I'm talking from experience, not easy to rebuild.
Yeah.
And start back over and kind of like find yourself again.
Yeah.
Because you go through a situation where you're like, all right, me and this person are one, we're a team, we have to do things together. And then once you don't have that anymore, you have to kind of, all right, who am I now? And I think that's what a lot of guys are kind of dealing with. Like, hey, who am I? What is my value? What do I bring to the world? And how can I make myself better?
Right.
I think that's something to think about.
Yeah. Do you reach out to people? Do you have like your friends that you lean on?
I am bad with that. and I say that in terms of like, I am the type of person who I will reach out and help anybody, anywhere, anytime. I'll pick up my phone and answer it, and I'll help them. I'll talk to them. I'll see them through things. But when it comes time for me needing help, I will sit in my corner and suck it up. Like, all right, that's what I got to do. Just got to deal with what I got to deal with until it's over with. Now, I don't think that's a good way to handle things. I'll say that off grip. It's not a good way to handle things, but that's kind of the way I've kind of mentally trained myself, because that's the way, unfortunately, that I grew up. Like, you know, growing up being, by hearing what men are supposed to do. Men are supposed to be the strong ones. They're supposed to be the ones, when something goes wrong, you got to fix it. You know, and no matter what, no matter if you can fix it or not, you have to fix it. You have to figure out a way to fix this problem. My family has a problem right now that they can't solve, and you being the man of the house have to figure out a way to fix it. And sometimes, from experience, just being the man of the house isn't enough to fix the problem. And I think that's what we need to kind of understand and realize that, hey, sometimes you just can't fix it. Sometimes you got to reach across the aisle and ask for help so you can fix it. And I'm still learning that.
Well, even just support and nurture. I'm going to challenge you to be vulnerable with someone you trust in the next couple weeks and see if you like it. It doesn't have to be a big thing. You can just, you know, talk about, you know, something, you know, test the waters. But I don't know. And I also have to say, like, I do that a lot. Like, I find that the best way to get away from feeling bad is to focus on other people and service. And I don't think that is of itself a bad thing. It's just, if you let that be the only way, you also are not giving yourself the opportunity to really be the part of the community, because you're always just doing this, right? Yes. Instead of letting yourself be in that back and forth. I appreciate you. Thank you. Don't know you that well, but in the podcast community and the times that we've interacted, it's always been really joyful. And I would love to know that you also let people show up for you sometimes.
Yeah, thank you for that. I appreciate you too. I have to get, like I said, I have to get better at that, because, you know, it's almost this kind of, not to be arrogant, it's almost this superhero complex where you have to, like, save everyone, but no one's saving you. Like, I got to save everybody. I got to fix this problem. I got to fix this problem. I got to fix this problem. But end of the day, what about your problems?
Yeah. Or just even having someone to talk to. Like, I've always had a lot of close friends and a lot of female friends for the most part, also male friends. And the relationships that I have with women are different. And they get some things about what it is in society. Like, I can be empathetic all you want, but I don't really know what it's like, because I have never been a man in American society. I've never been a Black man in American society. Yes. Like, I don't really know. All I can do is say I can listen. I can say I could see that. But somebody else who's been through that, who's a man, who's a Black man, and gets things that you don't have to say, those moments of silence that speak louder than words. Those friendships and those moments of being able to share, even when there's no active solving and there's no, like, doing things, and I'm very much a doer. I'm going to fix stuff. Yeah. But I've learned that those moments of that very loud silence that means that this other person actually sees and gets this thing that I don't even know how to talk about, that gives me an energy and it's a feeling of security and connection or something that, like, lets those things feel less overwhelming or disheartening, because I'm not in it alone, maybe. And so I think even without the help part, just having those places in your life where you let people see you in those moments and share that can be, I think, helpful in facing that hard, and, like you said, all of the things that we're looking around going, really, this is what's happening right now? I don't understand any of it.
Yeah, it's
this is a good idea.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy, because Black culture, we kind of bond and we kind of relate to each other through trauma. Like, and you can tell by it, because of the things that, how we react to certain things that happen. Like, a lot of things that happen that we deal with as a collective, you'll see we crack jokes on it. Like, we'll crack jokes on it, and that's kind of a coping mechanism for us. Like, anytime you see a tragedy happen with Black people, or something crazy happen that we're upset about, you'll see us get angry and you'll see us crack jokes about it. Because that's how we cope with it. I think that's a really strong coping mechanism. And we kind of all, it's communal in the sense where when certain things happen, it's almost an unsaid rule that, all right, we know what's going on here. Like, when we see blatant racism, you don't have to tell us, hey, that's racist. We already know. Like, oh, yeah, we don't like that.
I got this.
Yeah, we already know. Like, all right, here we go. This is weird. And it's just kind of almost like, all right, like a sixth sense, almost like, hey, we see what's going on. We know what's bothering us. We can either sit in our pain and be angry, or we can crack jokes about it to hide the pain that we're really feeling about the situation. And I think that's kind of just one of the things we do. It's just like, well, can't do nothing about it, so we're going to crack jokes about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I have my own places in the world where I get that. And I think there is a huge mental health component to having a community that gets us. And it's a balance to, like, you don't want to be too much in your echo chamber. And you also need to have a place that you can land and not feel like you have to, you know, make it okay for someone, or, you know, explain how you're feeling when you're in the middle of a deep traumatic or a difficult response, and just be able to be in that experience and not have to deal with other people's needs around it.
Yeah. And I imagine it can be difficult for you sometimes as a being a woman and just dealing with everything you have to deal with, and the questions that come with that, and the hardships and the trials and tribulations that come with that. Cause people ask questions like, oh, well, you do it, why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? People not knowing your worth and you know your worth. So I can imagine you deal with a lot of that as well.
Yeah, it's where the women in my life are so powerfully important to me. They help me to see and stay grounded, and to not believe I'm supposed to be something else. It's like, no, I'm not that. I think, I've always been kind of a doer, like I said, a little bit in charge. The last person I dated was like, you're just really a guy. I'm like, no, I'm really not a guy. Yeah. I just like to get things done. I think there's lots of women that like to get things done. But it was interesting because it was very difficult for them to accept me as me, because they felt like because of that, I needed to, I was somehow not really a woman. I'm like, no, I think I am.
Yeah. I think people just kind of like have this expectation, and they kind of live on the expectation. Like, no, people are multifaceted. Like, men and women can be multifaceted, and there are levels to it. And some women are very independent. They want to do things, and the way they want to do things. And it takes someone understanding that to get that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not about, that's not manly. That's just you.
You know? Right.
It's a weird thing to tell somebody, like, oh, yeah, I think you just meant to be a guy. Like, no.
No.
Not at all. No. I just know what I want in life. It's okay.
Right. Yeah. No, thank you for acknowledging that. And I also, I really just appreciate the way that you reach out to connect. It's something that, for me, on the mental health side of things, the thing that keeps me inspired in life is these moments where I know I'm not alone. I know that despite the media and despite the large megaphone of despair, there are so many people who genuinely care and who are trying and who are looking for ways to connect and to create better options and better opportunities. They're just not rich and powerful, and they don't have a big megaphone. And so we have to keep finding them.
Yes, correct. And I think that's the cool thing about podcasting, to kind of wrap this up, is the fact that it's a community. It's a community of people that all of one goal, and they just kind of want their voices to be heard. And it doesn't matter if you do a comedy podcast or a music podcast or a mental health podcast, you're all still part of that one community, and you with different voices that want to be heard. And once you find your inner circle and group of people that you're down with and you're cool with, I think that helps you better yourself in a way.
Yeah.
And I'm very appreciative of it, because without podcasting, I wouldn't have met so many diverse people from different backgrounds and cultures. And I think that helps me a lot understand the world.
Yeah. I agree. I feel like it's the same. I've met so many people, and I've learned things just by listening to podcasts about worlds and people that I never would know in the day-to-day. I get to expose to understanding things that I just honestly wouldn't have even been aware of. So I agree. I think podcasting is a lot of access and information. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm really excited to hear the series.
My pleasure. It's going to be out hopefully soon, I guess. This has been a blast, Alicia.
Thanks, the same. All right, you have a great day.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.